Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today, May 15th, 2017, from the Decatur Herald and Review. And we will begin today with a breaking story. Child, one, dies in Lost Bridge Road head-on crash. From Decatur, a 17-month-old child died after a head-on collision on the city's east side early Monday. Officers responded at 12:20 a.m. to the crash near Lost Bridge Road and Western Drive, Sergeant Steve Hagemeyer of the Decatur Police Department said in a statement. The crash involved a passenger car and pickup truck. A 30-year-old male driver of the car was taken to a hospital for treatment, then transferred to a trauma center. A 17-month-old passenger in the car had critical injuries and was also taken to a local hospital where she died, Hagemeyer said. The male driver and only occupant of the pickup later went to the hospital but was not transported by ambulance. And we'll continue now with the front page of today's Herald and Review, starting with the article headlined, Spanish Teacher Never Quits. This is an article written by Donette Beckett of the Herald and Review from Decatur. Teaching Spanish is a lifelong calling that Maria Jacobs continues to answer, even 5 years after retiring. Jacobs taught Spanish for 42 years before she retired in 2012 from Johns Hill Magnet School, but she wasn't away from the classroom for long. Jacobs, who is from Cuba, began teaching her native language again to community members within a few weeks of retiring. She knows Decatur has a large Mexican population, having taught English as a Second Language, or ESL, classes to Hispanic students. She also knew teaching adults would be different. Children are not inhibited. They aren't afraid of making a mistake, and they pick it up quickly, she said. The adults are afraid of making a mistake. As an educator, Jacobs knows how to reach the adults, so she created an adult Spanish class at her church, Central Christian Church. Her students began to tell others, creating further interest in the community. Michael Carunas, senior minister at the church, allowed Jacobs to begin the class shortly after her request. He knew the class would be beneficial to the entire community, not just his congregation. Learning another language is really important, he said. It is the best way to build bridges of understanding. The first class had 25 students. For the second semester, church added a second class for advanced students. The 12-week Spanish classes have continued to grow throughout the years. Jacobs promises her adult students no tests, no homework, and no pressure. They want to be here and learn, she said, and we have fun. The free classes are offered on Thursday evening for beginners and Tuesday evening for advanced students. Most of her students are simply interested in learning or relearning a foreign language. A few of her students plan to travel to Spanish-speaking countries on mission trips. Others want to prepare for vacations to Spain, Mexico, and Florida. That's like going to another country, Jacobs said. One of her students, Brad Kane, works for the state of Illinois and encounters several bilingual people. He believes being fluent in Spanish can help his career. Understanding a new language gives an opportunity for professional growth, he said. In teaching children as well as adults, Jacobs refers to the way she was taught English when she first moved to America in 1963. When I learned English, I learned a lot of songs, she said. That is one of the best ways to learn a new language, through music. Jacobs arrived in Miami, Florida as a teenager from Cuba. She finished high school there and began teaching shortly after college. She met husband Edwin while teaching. They married in 1984. The couple, along with their daughter Vicky, lived in South Florida for another 10 years. When Hurricane Andrew hit the area in 1992, it destroyed their hometown of Homestead, Florida, and the church where he preached. Most of the people of the congregation left and never came back. After 2 years of struggling with Florida and weather and a destroyed church, Edwin decided to leave the area. He was originally from Indiana, so he was a Yankee to begin with, Jacobs said of her husband. He said he had had it with hurricanes and he wanted to go home. Edwin was able to find a job as a minister at a Decatur church. After 6 years, he retired. Edwin passed away 2 years ago. His wife has made a home for herself in Decatur and doesn't plan to leave anytime soon. I have a lot of friends here, and I like the change of seasons, she said. I like the church. It is like my second family. Leslie Johnson worked with Jacobs at Johns Hill for 3 years. She learned a lot from her teacher before she retired. Johnson is also an ESL teacher. I have a lot of her former students in my class, Johnson said. She began taking the adult class from Jacobs as a refresher. She has fun in the Spanish class. Maria teaches us to have conversations with each other, Johnson said, but I can understand more Spanish than I can speak. Linda Helton is taking Jacobs' advanced class on Tuesdays. She remembers the class from high school as being difficult. I was 14 the last time I used Spanish. Now I'm 68, she said. She is picking it up quickly, Jacobs said. And the sidebar notes that to enroll in Maria Jacobs' Spanish class, call Central Christian Church at 217-428-4336. There are a couple of pictures that accompany the article, both showing Sharon Jacobs helping students in her Spanish class. Obviously, lots of students in the class. And also from the front page, Valerie Wells of the Herald and Review writes an article from Decatur, Sunny Weather Makes Soccer Tournament a Family Pleasure. Soccer moms, dads, and kids couldn't have asked for a better day on Sunday for one of Central Illinois' biggest tournaments, the Mid-State Classic Cup. And many of the same families know what a bad day of soccer is like. 2 weeks ago, many of the same teams participated in a tournament in Schaumburg, where the temperature was 36 degrees and rain pelted down. Kids were coming off the field crying, said Decatur parent Julia Livingston, who was much more comfortable in Sunday's balmy and sunny weather. The tournament brings people in from all over the state and provides a boost to area businesses, she said. She'd noticed how busy Hickory Point Mall was, and friends had told her all the hotels were booked up, too. Livingston's husband, Stan, is a coach for one girls' team and an assistant on another, and in addition to their own kids' participation, soccer keeps them very busy indeed. But they don't mind and make a family outing of it spring and fall when the club teams are at their busiest. This is our third year playing soccer, said Karina Day of Peoria, whose husband was setting up a canopy tent to provide a shady spot for watching. The Days have a son and a daughter in soccer and spend a lot of time watching games. We look at it as an investment in the kids. It's good exercise for them and good learning opportunity dealing with winning and losing. It's kind of what we do every fall and every spring. The tournament has been around for 8 years, said Colin Bonner, director of coaching, and has grown from a handful of beginner and less experienced teams to one of the largest in the state. One thing organizers always hear from out-of-town visitors is how nice the fields are. Even the kids notice. Mid-State has the Decatur Park District to thank for that, which provides a maintenance team to care for the soccer complex at Stephen Decatur Middle School. They touch the grass and say, is it turf? Bonner said with a chuckle. What we offer is a family atmosphere and the best soccer fields in Illinois, probably. We get so many compliments. They also offer impressive trophies and a stage where the winners can enjoy their moment of glory to the fullest. Coaches are given MVP badges, and many choose to give them to a player on an opposing team who has shown good sportsmanship, he said. Kids may have lost the game, but the coach comes along and says, "You played a great game," Bonner said. "We have a great organization and great volunteer base, and it's so well organized. We take it seriously, and we pay attention to detail." More than 100 teams signed up for this year's soccer tournament, most from Illinois, though some even came from out of state. The youngest players are 7 and 8 years old, and the eldest are 19. Soccer, Bonner said, is a game for all ages. Ben Montano, 8, loves soccer because it's time spent with his friends outdoors having fun. And his father, Ivan, said the family doesn't mind the time commitment because it's so good for the kids to learn sportsmanship and teamwork. Like other families at the tournament, the Montanos spend most weekends going to games, and some require a bit of travel. "We spend every Mother's Day at a tournament," said tournament director Rod Schanefeld. "Fortunately, my wife likes soccer." In deference to Mother's Day, a vendor brought carnations for kids to give to their moms, and T-shirts were available with a heart enclosing a soccer ball. Plans are being made to upgrade the Decatur soccer complex even more than it already is, with permanent concession stands and restrooms, Schanefeld said. An expansion is planned that will create another field as well. Mid-State is one of the few clubs to clearly mark fields so families don't have to wander around wonder where their children are playing, and to provide parking and shuttles to carry families to the fields. And we have several pictures accompanying the article. The first one, a large variety of age groups played during the Mid-State Soccer Club's Youth Soccer Tournament in Central Illinois Saturday at the soccer complex in Decatur. And this picture shows some small soccer players. The next picture, Springfield's Alex Pittman enjoys his time during the Mid-State Soccer Club's Youth Soccer Tournament in Central Illinois. Then we have a large crowd, including Bloomington's Danielle Tiemann, gathered for the Mid-State Soccer Club's Youth Soccer Tournament. Several members of her family are sitting under a very large sun umbrella. Then we have lots of spectators all down the line. A large crowd gathered for the Mid-State Soccer Club's Youth Soccer Tournament. And we have Decatur's Joe Morelli sitting comfortably in a folding chair to watch the action during Mid-State Soccer's Youth Soccer Tournament. And finally, the caption reads, a large variety of age groups played during the Mid-State Soccer Youth's Soccer Tournament, and the photograph shows much older boys, mid to late teenagers, lined up hearing instructions from their coach. Then an article on the front page discusses cyber attack havoc could increase. An unprecedented ransomware cyber attack that has already hit tens of thousands of victims in 150 countries could wreak greater havoc as more malicious variations appear and people return to their desks today and power up computers at the start of the work week. As a loose global network of cybersecurity experts fought a rearguard battle against ransomware hackers, officials and experts on Sunday urged organizations and companies to update operating systems immediately to ensure they aren't vulnerable to a second, more powerful version of the software, or to future versions that can't be stopped. The initial ransomware attack, known as WannaCry, paralyzed computers that run Britain's hospital network, Germany's national railway, and scores of other companies and government agencies worldwide in what was believed to be the biggest online extortion scheme ever recorded. It hit 200,000 victims across the world since Friday and is seen as an escalating threat, said Rob Wainwright, the head of Europol, Europe's policing agency. The numbers are still going up, Wainwright said. We've seen that the slowdown of the infection rate over Friday night, after a temporary fix around it, has now been overcome by a second variation the criminals have released. At least two variants of the rapidly replicating worm were discovered Sunday, and one did not include the so-called kill switch that allowed researchers to interrupt its spread by diverting it to a dead end on the internet. Ryan Callenber, senior vice president at Proofpoint Inc., which helped stop its spread, said the version without a kill switch was able to spread, but it contained a flaw that wouldn't allow it to take over a computer and demand ransom to unlock files. However, he said it's only a matter of time before a malevolent version exists. "I still expect another to pop up and be fully operational," Callenber said. "We haven't fully dodged this bullet at all until we're patched against the vulnerability itself." The attack held users hostage by freezing their computers, encrypting their data, and demanding money through online Bitcoin payments, $300 at first, rising to $600 before it destroys files hours later. It was too early to say who was behind the onslaught, which struck 100,000 organizations, and what their motivation was, aside from the obvious demand for money. So far, not many people have paid the ransom demanded by the malware, Europol spokesman Jen Urth, told the Associated Press. The effects were felt around the globe, disrupting computers that run factories, banks, government agencies, and transport systems in nations as diverse as Russia, Ukraine, Brazil, Spain, India, and the U.S. Britain's National Health Service was hit hard, while Russia's Interior Ministry and companies including Spain's Telefonica, FedEx Corporation in the U.S., and French carmaker Renault all reported disruptions. Chinese media reported Sunday that students at several universities were hit, blocking access to their thesis papers and dissertation presentations. The full extent of the attack won't become fully clear until today, when millions of workers return to the office for the first time after the attacks. By going online, they will open more avenues to spread the malicious software. "It's this constant battle," Ryan O'Leary, vice president of White Hat Security's Threat Research Center, said. "The bad guys are always one step ahead." Researchers who helped prevent the spread of malware in cybersecurity firms madly worked around the clock during the weekend to monitor the situation and install a software patch in corporations across the U.S., Europe, and Asia that would block the worm from infecting computers. "Right now, just about every IT department has been working all weekend rolling this out," Dan Weyer, spokesman at FireEye, said. Businesses, government agencies, and other organizations were urged to quickly implement a patch released by Microsoft Corp. The ransomware exploits older versions of Microsoft's operating system software, such as Windows XP. Installing the patch is one way to secure computers against the virus. The other is to disable a type of software that connects computers to printers and faxes, which the virus exploits, O'Leary added. Microsoft distributed a patch that could have forestalled much of the attack, but in many organizations, it was likely lost among the blizzard of updates and patches that largely corporate and government IT departments strained to manage. "It's one of those things, in a perfect world, if people were up to date on the patches, this wouldn't be a problem," O'Leary said. "But there are so many things to patch. The patch lists can be ginormous. It can be tough to tell which patch is important until it is too late." Installing a patch can potentially require rebooting computers and therefore can be disruptive, O'Leary said. As a result, many IT departments delay installing patches until it is clearer what is important. And there's a coming up column on the front page of today's paper. Coming up, things we're working on this week. Durfee kicks in for Good Samaritan Inn. Xantaria Smith knows what it is to need help and for her community to lend that helping hand. When she was younger, her family spent some time living in God's Shelter of Love and has also received food baskets from community organizations. I want to help other people and give back to my community because they gave to us, said the Durfee Magnet School fifth grader. Some months ago, Durfee students created a food pantry in an unused closet at the school and began preparing bags of food to send home with Durfee students who might not have enough to eat over the weekend when school breakfasts and lunches aren't available. From there, the students expressed interest in doing more to help people in the community, and fifth grade teachers Heather Heron and Karen Walker helped them research ideas. When the kids came upon information about Good Samaritan Inn, they reached out to the organization and set up a volunteer day. Students worked in the garden and delivered donations, including one to God's Shelter, next door to Good Samaritan. Staff writer Valerie Wells follows the students' efforts in her Wednesday Education column. Also, Caterpillar hopes to build on momentum. Caterpillar management is seen to build on first quarter results that came in better than expected and blew past industry analyst expectations. Caterpillar said it was looking forward to a bright future, and our story Tuesday will look at what the company is continuing to say about its prospects. Some dark clouds remain, however. Caterpillar has said it will spend $1.25 billion on restructuring costs in 2017, a sharp jump up from previous estimates. How safe factory jobs will remain depends on whether the company sees a recent turnaround in commodity prices, vital for the mining customers who are the main buyers of the giant dump trucks built in Decatur, continuing deeper into the year. And next, Little Theater in Sullivan celebrates 60 years. The Little Theater on the Square is celebrating its 60th anniversary, and staff writer Donette Beckett is previewing the happy milestone. Actors from the past will be returning throughout the summer season, including Broadway actress Anna McNeely. McNeely's love of the theater began in Sullivan as a child. She will reprise her role as Mrs. Potts in Beauty and the Beast, the theater's opening musical. Shows for the upcoming summer season are also part of the grand celebration. According to executive director John Stevens, theaters of this size rarely have a celebration such as this. This is a milestone for these types of theaters, he said. Also, in the coming up column, faded mural looks over downtown Decatur. It may be the oldest building mural in Decatur. The two windows overlooking the intersection of Merchant and Main Streets in the city's downtown. The murals have started to fade some in recent years and could use some touch-up. The Herald and Review archives have provided stories on the paintings, which have been in place since 1985, and our story on Thursday looks at what's being considered to restore a fresher look. And finally, in the coming up column, backyard chickens take off for Bethany couple. Danny and Teresa Banks of Bethany just wanted a couple backyard chickens. Now they've got four large coops, more than 60 birds, and they're winning accolades in competitions around the Midwest. Welcome to the Feathered Friends Hobby Farm. Mark Tupper visits their farm in this weekly column on Saturday. And from the local page, Ryan Voiles from the Herald and Review writes from Decatur, new public works vehicles on council agenda. The Decatur City Council is expected to vote tonight on whether to spend more than $100,000 on new vehicles for the public works fleet. The vehicles, four 2017 Ford F-250s and one 2017 Ford F-150, will cost a total of $136,423 and would replace five current vehicles in the department that are between 10 and 12 years old. Those vehicles would then be sold at auction. It's a budgeted item and it's something we've needed to get done, City Manager Tim Gleason said Friday. The five trucks to be purchased from Decatur's Jackson Ford are to be assigned to various areas in the Public Works Department, including to the street foreman and the sanitary sewer foreman, to streets and sewer troubleshooter, and the Water Services Division. Decatur's Jackson Ford was the lowest bidder in each case. The Council agenda and informational packet also contain a progress report on the $91 million dredging project, which started up again March 31st. Since dredging began in November 2014, a total of 6,433,110 cubic yards of material have been removed, providing 31 days of additional water supply, according to the memo. One cubic yard equals about 200 gallons of material. In the last month alone, 61,966 cubic yards of material from Sand Creek and 255,865 cubic yards from Basin 2 has been dredged. The project is now 60% complete and is expected to be finished by the end of 2019. Unlike the last meeting where the agenda was kept light, intentionally due to the swearing-in of two new council members, Gleason said Monday's agenda just worked out that way. "It just turned out that way unplanned," he said. Gleason said the large issue on the horizon is the discussions on neighborhood revitalization. He hopes the council will kick off that conversation at a meeting earlier next month, either next month or in early July. Those discussions are expected to last a month or two before the council is presented with a plan by late fall or early winter. And the Herald and Review staff writes, "Police: hit-and-run driver arrested in Maroa after chase." A 25-year-old Downs man was arrested Sunday following two non-injury traffic wrecks and a police chase, according to the Macon County Sheriff's Office. The man, identified as Cody Riddle, faces preliminary charges of driving under the influence with blood alcohol content over 0.08%, and driving under the influence of a combination of drugs and alcohol, along with several other traffic citations, according to the Sheriff's Office. The incident began to unfold at 5:20 p.m. when the Decatur Police Department received a call about a hit-and-run crash near the intersection of MacArthur Road and Ash Avenue in Decatur, Sheriff's Lieutenant Jamie Belcher said in a statement. The victim of the crash told police that she followed the vehicle, a blue Ford F-150, eastbound on Ash Avenue until it turned north on U.S. 51. The vehicle continued north on U.S. 51, and at 5:27 p.m., the Sheriff's Office received a call about a hit-and-run crash at the intersection with Barnett Avenue in Forsyth. A nearby deputy arrived on the scene where witnesses said a blue F-150 had crashed into a minivan and an SUV and continued north. The dispatch center received several calls reporting the location of the pickup, which callers said struck a mailbox and drove erratically in ditches, fields, and all over the road, Belcher said. An officer with the Maroa Police Department attempted to stop the truck at the intersection of U.S. 51 and Durack Road, but the driver, later identified as Riddle, continued north. Riddle was pursued as he drove on the shoulder and through a ditch before coming back on the road and stopping just south of the DeWitt County line at Lake Fork Road at 5:45 p.m., Belcher said. The Moreau officer and a Macon County Sheriff's deputy ordered Riddle from his truck, but found him slumped over the steering wheel, Belcher said. Once they were able to remove him from the vehicle, he began to act strangely, which prompted a call for medical help from the Decatur Ambulance Service and the Maroa Fire Department. Riddle was taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital for medical evaluation and later booked into Macon County Jail. No one was injured in any of the crashes, Belcher said. Formal charging decisions will be made by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. And this ends our first half hour reading from the Decatur Herald and Review on May 15th, 2017. Stay tuned, and we will begin our second half hour in just a few minutes. Thank you.